litigation?
Did appellate counsel do that? Well, appellate counsel was the same as trial counsel. After the verdict was rendered, he asked for a few more days from the trial judge and said, could I have a few days to make some phone calls for mitigation, and then had none. There's none. Does that answer your question?
Well, I was inarticulate. Has habeas counsel looked?
Yes.
To see if there was some other mitigation that can be offered to us as to why we should afford additional.
Yes.
Because the defendant really didn't, from what I gather from the record, was not cooperative, which is quite often the case, but doesn't excuse not opining for looking for mitigation.
No. The starting point, Justice Douglas, was me talking to Mr. Knape. I thought when I read this, well, we'll just go out and talk to Mr. Knape and we'll find out about his family. I found out within one or two conversations, boy, this is going to be a real problem. It is clear that Mr. Knape is not only a poor historian, he won't tell you who he is. We don't know. That's not Richard Allen Knape. The man that I represent is not Richard Allen Knape. He is somebody different than that. He either comes from Jamaica or Hawaii. But there was another thing that made it obvious that there was mitigation, and that was he has a prosthetic eye. He was shot in the eye. And so I really like this part of this oral argument because, as we can see, we have Justice Springer asking what Justice Douglas is saying, well, what mitigation do we have? What I found was the most tremendous mitigation that I think will ever come before this court on a capital case, and we have presented that through competency. And so I'd like to now take, I know it's boring, but I just want to read to you from the three doctors that testified at the competency hearing in this post-conviction. And once a review of that takes place, a summary, I don't see how any rational human can say that the mitigation in this case was not overwhelming. And it started by me just listening to Mr. Knape and realizing he isn't going to tell me anything. Something's wrong with his eye. He's bizarre. He's babbling. Have him psyched. So we do that. The first doctor I'm going to read from is the defense doctor, so he can be looked with a certain amount of skepticism. He's for the defense. The next two that I'm going to refer to are going to be the state's doctors, and there seems to be a unanimous verdict in their analysis of Mr. Knape. Dr. David Schmidt, a psychologist, analyzed Mr. Knape. He noted that he had a prosthetic eye.
Can you give us the record site if you're going to read to us?
Yes. I am reading directly from my reply brief at page 8, and all of the sites that I'm going to read are after each sentence in the reply brief.
That's fine. Thank you. I just wanted to be sure.
So it's this first full paragraph from the reply brief at page 8. Mr. Knape reported a gunshot wound occurred as either a teenager or in 1982. Dr. Schmidt noted that he had analyzed approximately 40 death row inmates. Mr. Knape suffers from delusions and hallucinations. Mr. Knape believes that he's controlled by spirits which eat on him at night. These spirits are sent by Germans that work at a computer store in Las Vegas. Spirits follow him from prison to prison. According to Dr. Schmidt, Mr. Knape has an overall IQ of 60. Dr. Schmidt feels Mr. Knape's IQ is between 55 and 65. Dr. Schmidt concluded that Mr. Knape was not competent to assist counsel in the post-conviction proceedings. Dr. Schmidt believed that 9 out of 10 mental health professionals would diagnose Mr. Knape as paranoid schizophrenic unless they were experienced in dealing with brain injuries such as the one suffered by Mr. Knape. Dr. Schmidt believed that Mr. Knape is mentally ill and believes the information that Mr. Knape contains he will not pass on to others. State's doctor, Dr. Shira Bradley, who was asked to analyze Mr. Knape during this post-conviction proceedings. Dr. Bradley, a psychologist, analyzed Mr. Knape and diagnosed him as a paranoid schizophrenic. Mr. Knape is obsessed with spirit problems. The Germans have control of the spirits. These spirits cause problems for Mr. Knape, including problems from a previous competency evaluator. A previous evaluator had coughed and sneezed, which proved that the spirits were under the control of the evaluator. The spirits control his thoughts and gave him headaches. Dr. Bradley significantly found that Mr. Knape shows no sign of malingering.
Let me ask you if just to make sure I'm correct, he actually underwent psychological evaluations in 1995, 1996, and 1998, correct?
When you say that, Justice Perry, I
And, well, the first mention of the spirits was about 2004, wasn't
correct.
It?
That's correct.
And he had had previous evaluations before that?
My understanding from Judge Dahl, when he was at the evidentiary hearing and I questioned him, he said that he requested a psychological evaluation, but it had not been approved. So
not I'm, necessarily by the defense, but my understanding that he was seen in 1995, 96, 98. If that's incorrect, and that's cited record on appeal 269 through 272.
Do you recall who conducted those psychological tests? Because that must be something that the doctors at the prison referred to, because Judge Dahl had no knowledge of this.
Quite possible.
Yeah, and so what I saw is that he had difficulty dealing with me. So,
but the spirits popped up in 2004.
Spirits pop up in 2004. At least that's the first that we have of it, Justice Perry.
Okay.
But as I go through further, Mr. Knave has been shot in the eye, according to Dr. Bradley. She concluded he suffered from hallucinations and delusions. He was providing inconsistent information regarding his family history. Then we have the second doctor for the state, Dr. Dodge Slagle. He said the spirits invaded Mr. Knave's body through his ears, causing insomnia, pain in his feet, spots on his skin. The spirits were stealing his food and made him unable to gain weight. The spirits moved like bullets. The spirits caused Dr. Slagle to sneeze. Mr. Knave avoided flushing the toilet because the spirits would have an adverse effect upon him.
Mr. Oram, you've reserved some time here, and I don't want to... We can read just as well as you can read. I don't know that this is particularly productive. It seems like the important question here is whether your client's mental capacity, as you are discussing in 2004, was existent in 1988 and 1989. Do you have anything that you offered in the district court to connect the status of your client's mental health capacity in 2004
yes.
with the status of his capacity at the time of trial?
Yes. During the evidentiary hearing for post-conviction, I asked Judge Dahl, were you aware of Sheila Wooten, that's the co-defendant,
mm-hmm.
Were you aware of her statement? During her statement to the police, she said it appeared that Mr. Knape had sort of another personality. When I asked him that, he said, yes, I was aware of that. So just on that witness alone, there should have been some thought that what is wrong with this individual? He was not analyzed by the defense. There is no psychological analysis mm-hmm. done. And so, first of all, I don't believe IQ changes substantially into middle age. And where is there an idea that a delusional, paranoid schizophrenic like this, like Mr. Knape, in any way has become paranoid schizophrenic somehow in middle age? The state put forth no evidence to that, to make that argument. They simply have their own doctor saying, yes, he's paranoid schizophrenic. He has a very low IQ. And so where is the argument that I am wrong? In other words, I had to abandon the mental retardation argument because part of it requires that I prove the onset of that IQ occurred before 18. I can't show his previous history because he won't tell me. I don't know who he is. So I had to abandon that. But under Adkins, and if you look at the cases even by this court and the U.S. Supreme Court, it is inhumane to execute an individual like this. Inhumane to do that. And so how with a man this mentally ill, this incompetent, and with a penalty phase that lasted 90 minutes with nothing good to say about the man, how can we reconcile these two facts, the mental illness and the low IQ that I have demonstrated, versus I got nothing to say for the guy?
What was trial counsel's testimony on post-conviction relief about the 90 minutes and nothing good to say?
He said he felt bad. I remember a part of it where he said that 6 years later he had a lot more experience. He would have done things a lot differently. He complained about the lack of funding for psych testing. And so I think he'd hoped that he'd have a psychologist, but how do you not have a psychologist with a man this mentally ill? And so that's the problem here, is that we can't let this go. I mean, you're going to let a penalty phase where there's nothing to be said good about the man, and that's complained of by a justice on this court. Send it back, find out what's going on with this man. Well, now that we know what's going on, how can we possibly reconcile the two? How can we say that this is not a violation of the Fifth Amendment and the Eighth Amendment?
Is this an appropriate case where this court takes upon itself to sentence him to life without?
I think you could reweigh it and do that, yes, absolutely, under Rippo and Arcanian. They cite Rippo and Arcanian. I analyzed the facts. Rippo was my case in front of this court. He pulled two women in, was convicted of it, took them into a closet, duct-taped them, stuck socks in their mouth, shocked them with a stun belt, had a previous rape conviction. This court reweighed it and said, beyond a reasonable doubt, a jury would do that to him again. In Arcanian, he murdered two women down the street in a jewelry store. When one of the women was taken out, a 14-inch ring sizer fell out of the back of her skull. These are very brutal crimes. Mr. Knape, all first-degree murders are miserable crimes, but if you look at this is a robbery gone wrong, serious robbery gone wrong. But when you look at the mitigation and the weighing process, I think the only appropriate thing for the court to do is to reweigh and say that this is life without parole. How can we sentence this man to death with an IQ of 55, at most 65? It doesn't even meet Atkins. And so the state didn't put forth any arguments to the contrary. They don't have a single argument that, hey, this man has a 70 IQ, nothing. And they don't argue that he's not mentally ill. He's delusional. He hallucinates. And so I don't really see how we can let this move forward under these circumstances with this type of mitigation not being presented to the jury. I see my time has run out.
Thank you, Mr. Orme. I think you've made your argument. Go ahead, Mr. Van Bosker.
Good morning. My name is Jonathan Van Bosker. I represent the state. May it please the court. During oral argument on the direct appeal, Judge Dahl was asked why no mitigation was presented. And what he tells the court is, Mr. Knape didn't give us the information we needed for an investigation. Now, fast forward 20-some-odd years to the March 6, 2009 evidentiary hearing, where Mr. Orem abandons the Atkins claim. What he tells the district court is, we have not been able to establish a background for Mr. Knape. If we could and could talk to people, then we could ask them questions about his intellectual capacity before the age of 18. Yet on appeal, we're told that Judge Dahl was incompetent for failing to uncover the same type of information. According to defense, if only Judge Dahl had seen the mental health clues in his conversations with Mr. Knape, in Mr. Knape's prosthetic eye, and in Sheila Wooten's statement, there'd be a mountain of mitigation. The plain truth of this record is there's no deficient performance. As to the contact with Mr. Knape, Judge Dahl testified that he had represented many mentally challenged individuals and that Mr. Knape did not raise any mental health red flags. The judge believed that Mr. Knape understood what he was telling him, he just didn't like it. In all of their conversations, Judge Dahl never once heard Mr. Knape mention the spirits or do or say anything that raised a mental health concern. As to the lack of helpful mitigation information from Mr. Knape, Judge Dahl believed it was either because Mr. Knape didn't want to provide it, and that was not out of the ordinary for Judge Dahl's experience. Excuse me. He had other death penalty defendants who simply didn't want to provide that kind of information. Judge Dahl
also... Previous to this case or after this case?
In the transcript, he says contemporaneous with this case, around the same time, but he isn't specific as to whether it was all before, all after, or some before, some after. But he basically says he had other death defendants who didn't want to provide this type of information. In fact, I think the Riley case that this court adjudicated at one point was one of those defendants. But in any event, Judge Dahl says that Mr. Knape didn't raise any mental health red flags. As to why he didn't share mitigation information, another belief by the judge was that Mr. Knape had just not lived the kind of lifestyle to build the relationships necessary to have mitigation leads. He testified that Mr. Knape had stuff all over the country and that he just didn't know if the relationships were there. As to the prosthetic eye, Mr. Knape himself initially tells Dr. Schlegel that the eye injury had no impact on his mental capabilities. More importantly, Dr. Schmidt says he can make no connection between the eye injury and any mental health concerns. As to Ms. Wooten's statement, Judge Dahl reviewed it. He just didn't think it raised any mental health issues. In fact, the judge agreed that the statement portrayed not a mentally challenged individual, but a man who was domestically controlling and violent. If you read Ms. Wooten's statement, she tells police that initially, when she meets Knape in California, he's nice, he treats her well. But when they leave her family and travel to Las Vegas, suddenly he will not let her out of his sight, he begins to beat her, and he threatens her with a gun. But ultimately, if Ms. Wooten is the gateway to this mythical mountain of negation, Mr. Knape forever barred the path. He specifically told Wooten, don't talk to my lawyer. You can see that on page 14 of her statement. More on this record is their prejudice. Three doctors put in writing that Mr. Knape was competent. Now, Dr. Schmidt did flip-flop at the evidentiary hearing. He said he had attended some seminar, and based on that seminar, he now believed the U.S. Supreme Court's dusky opinion required not only the factual understanding, but also a reasonable understanding of the legal proceedings. However, defense has given this court nothing to provide authority for that distinction in the law, nor have they provided anything from the psychiatric realm to justify it. There's no indication at the time of the offense or trial that Mr. Knape was laboring under any mental health difficulties. Dr. Schlegel and Bradley concluded that any issue could have developed in prison. Dr. Schmidt admitted that he could only document current impairments. And most importantly, in 1997, a prison psychiatrist found no Axis I diagnosis. As to Mr. Knape's current spirit delusion, according to Dr. Schlegel, Knape says the first time it manifests is 1996. The first observable incident is in 2004 when prison staff overhear him talking about the spirits.
Counsel, is the IQ something that's relevant at all to the mental health analysis? That, I think we can agree, likely doesn't change significantly from point A to where we are today.
No, I don't think it's particularly important. I'll tell you why. Mr. Orm abandoned the Atkins claim at trial. Under this court's Ybarra opinion, you interpreted Atkins and NRS 174.098 to require clear and convincing evidence of intellectual deficits, functional deficits, and juvenile onset. He says he can't establish the juvenile onset. Here, the IQ issue wasn't fairly litigated. Mr. Orm abandoned it. In fact, let me give you an example from the record. Mr. Orm at the evidentiary hearing asks Dr. Schlegel, did you do IQ tests? She says, no, I didn't because I wasn't asked. She wasn't asked because IQ really doesn't relate to the competency. If you look at Chomsky, what it really aligns with is the functionality deficit prong of Ybarra. And on that score, the record simply doesn't support the claim. Dr. Schlegel testified that he was surprised that the IQ came in at 60. He said based on his interactions with Mr. Knape, Mr. Knape's vocabulary and his grammar, he was surprised at that IQ level. In fact, he went on to say that if the IQ really was 60, Mr. Knape had done an excellent, I think his exact words were, a nice job of functioning under such a deficit. So if the IQ is important to the court, it really wasn't fairly litigated. I guess that's my point. Again, there was the psychiatrist in 1997 from the prison found that there was no Axis I diagnosis. As to the spirit issue, according to Dr. Schlegel, Knape says that first comes up in 1996. It's first observed by the prison guards, but they say it's out of character for him. More importantly, Dr. Schlegel and Bradley conclude that the spirit delusion does not interfere with Mr. Knape's ability to communicate. Dr. Bradley specifically testified that when Mr. Knape would start to talk about the spirits, she could redirect him. Dr. Schlegel was of the view that the spirit delusion did not cause Mr. Knape to provide misinformation, and he specifically testified that, excuse me, I have a bit of a He specifically testified that Mr. Knape's ability to assist his counsel could be assisted with medication, therapy, and a mental health consultant. Even Dr. Schmidt admitted that Mr. Knape could communicate information. that the issue for Dr. Schmidt was that he couldn't verify it. At the evidentiary hearing, Judge Dahl indicated it wasn't like Mr. Knaik was giving different birth dates or different parents. It was more that he gave some inconsistent information, but they just couldn't verify the information that he gave. Ultimately, Mr. Knaik's lack of helpful mitigation information simply does not substantiate ineffective assistance of counsel. Again, Judge Dahl thought the man couldn't provide it because he hadn't lived the lifestyle to have those connections, or it was because he didn't want to provide it. Dr. Schlegel was of the view that it was a cultural issue, or that Mr. Knaik came from a broken family where those family ties had never evolved. But the real bottom line of this record is that trial and post-conviction counsel were both desperately reaching for information that just wasn't there. That's not incompetence. That's people doing the best they can in a bad situation.
And tell us about the aggravating circumstances.
I'm sorry?
Tell us about the aggravating circumstances.
In terms of the notice? In terms of what?
No, just what are the aggravating circumstances?
I believe the aggravating circumstances, there were four in this case. There was the prior felony, there was avoiding arrest, the depravity of mind, and the robbery aggravator. Clearly, the depravity of mind and the robbery are no longer the table. I have Knaik this afternoon, Crump this afternoon, so I may be blurring the records a bit, but they received appropriate notice of the aggravating circumstances, and they were appropriately supported. Are you asking if there was evidence to support them?
Well, you said there was a prior felony.
Yes, there was the liquor store robbery.
And where was that?
That was here in Las Vegas. It actually occurred factually after this incident, but the conviction came before. The issue that Mr. Oren raised in his brief was that the notice was inappropriate.
Was there any out-of-state information on this guy at all?
I know that Judge Dahl said that at the evidence hearing, he testified that Mr. Knaik was saying he had stuff all over the country and that he was trying to gather that information, that he had made contacts through the mail and over the phone. He specifically mentioned Hawaii and Jamaica, but he said that none of that panned out. He only got one good mitigation lead from Mr. Knaik. That was a lady back east, and he said that conversation was not pleasant and she was not helpful.
What was the testimony of the public defender investigators?
I don't believe they testified at the evidentiary hearing.
Why?
You'd have to ask Mr. Oren. He's the one who put them on the stand. But Judge Dahl's real point was, look, Mr. Knaik didn't give him the contacts he needed. It wasn't that his office wouldn't provide the resources. It was that he just didn't have the information he needed to justify sending someone to Hawaii or sending someone.
Mr. Oren said that there was trouble getting funding for psychological examination.
That's not what Judge Dahl said. If you read his testimony, what he said was he would have to justify these things to his office. It wasn't a matter of course.
It's a misrepresentation by
counsel? No, I'm not. Mr. Oren's a man. I'm not saying that at all.
Let's call it spade a spade. Is it or isn't it? Is there a misrepresentation or isn't there?
I think
don't beat around the bush. I asked you a question. Answer it.
I'm answering. I think we're interpreting it differently. What I will tell you the record says on my read of it is that Judge Dahl testified that it wasn't that his office wouldn't provide the resources. It was that he would have to justify the expenditure of the resources. He said it wasn't as if they had to pick and choose between what clients they would help and what they wouldn't. If they had a rational, reasonable explanation or need for it, they would get the resources. As to the mental health examination, he said he just had no facts to give to his office to say, I need this. As to the mitigation trips, he said that he had no leads. He called people in Hawaii, he called people in Jamaica, and he got no leads. So he couldn't justify the expense. He couldn't go to his chain of command and say, I need this, because he had nothing to back it up.
Did the second trial counsel testify too, the one who helped Mr.
I don't believe so.
Was there second trial counsel?
I don't believe so.
So he tried it by himself?
Correct, is my belief.
And this was like in 88? Is this when the trial
The offense was in 88. The trial started May 22nd, 89. The penalty hearing started May 30th, 89.
Could I ask you a question? If you take the McConnell aggravator out, and you don't have depravity of mind, which was what was mainly emphasized as I read this record in the original trial, you're left with the other felony which postdated the crime here, and the murder was to avoid detection or arrest. So where are we in terms of, I understand that the fact that it postdates is not in and of itself a problem, but it doesn't show the sort of escalating violence that that aggravator captures. So I'd like to hear from you, if we were to reweigh, why this man deserved the death penalty.
I would submit that first, you can't get to the reweighing, because there's no path to it. But to answer your question directly, if the court was to reweigh it, we have two aggravators, the avoid arrest and the prior felony.
Yeah.
We also have no mitigation. This Judge Dahl was not able to provide any mitigation factors. And it wasn't his fault. He tried, and he couldn't get it. So even if you're left with two, those are still two solid aggravators.
Has this ever been reviewed without the McConnell factor by any court?
I don't believe so. I believe the post-conviction history are somewhat tortured. The remittiture
issue
in 95 or 96 from direct appeal, and from that time through today, we're still dealing with the first petition.
Okay.
So I don't think that has ever come before this court. But if you take it off the table, assuming that McConnell would strike, right, which I think it would, you still have two aggravators. And you have to remember the facts of this crime were particularly brutal at the time. It was an execution-style murder of a tourist, a man on the side of the street.
This is the one where they gave him a ride from the gas station?
Correct. Right? He took him to the AMPM to buy gas. He slumps down in the seat when the clerk looks at him. And he's shot in the back of the head. I mean, for the time, this was a particularly egregious murder.
Is there such a thing as a non-brutal first-degree murder?
No. I wholeheartedly agree with Mr. Oram. They're all miserable. But you have to put them in the context of their time frame to determine which is death eligible and which isn't. And the facts of this case are particularly brutal. Unless there's any more questions, I'll
thank you.
See
you
the podium.
My question.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Van Bosker. All right, Mr. Oram, we've pretty much covered your time. Unless any justices have any questions for you.
I think you have a right to respond to my question to the prosecutor as to whether you made a misrepresentation or not, Mr. Oram.
I pulled this up.
What did Judge Dahl say about money?
I'm referring to my opening brief, page 18, and I have all the cites. The public defender did not have his own investigator, so most of the investigation was done by the attorney. In order to obtain the services of an expert, the attorney would need leadership approval. He then says, Judge Dahl, so I didn't know, in comparing what I did for Mr. Knape to what I would have done 6 years later, I don't know, it bothers me. Mr. Dahl, if he had a psychologist available, he would have had a full explanation or evaluation conducted of Mr. Knape. That's what he admitted. He didn't have the funding. He couldn't get it done, and he's saying, I would have done it. And that's the answer. It was obvious that the mitigation all came in from a psychological analysis. If you do that, you just go into Pandora's box and out comes all these difficulties. And that's the problem if you don't have insight. And that's very basic, even for 1989.
Now, did you say there was no investigator?
He said that there was no investigator. He didn't have individual investigators available on each case. Judge Dahl was, very straightforward at the evidentiary hearing. And I think he was, like he said, it bothers me what happened. He should have had him psyched. There should have been funding for it. It would have led to all this mitigation.
Nothing further. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Oram, Mr. Van Bosker, for your arguments this morning. The case will stand submitted. And.